welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 193 of the podcast, and it is the 24th of August 2014 as I record this. And I realised that I think I mentioned that I was going to do some kind of special 200th episode where I reflect on everything I've learned over 200 episodes, and like that will be like 120 hours or something of interviews, and then I realised that in order for me to do that, I need to start kind of thinking in advance, because time goes swiftly, and the podcast is actually scheduled at the moment all the way out till almost Christmas, so there's plenty of exciting people coming on the show. Anyway, today I have an interview with Tucker Max about his new book, The Bookstrapper Guide to Marketing Your Book, Creating a Bestseller by Yourself. Now, Tucker is infamous for some of his own stunts, and his books, his the kind of, you know, boys stuff, funny humour, some would say. Well, anyway, they're not for everyone, but he is undoubtedly a very smart entrepreneur and marketer, and the book is also co-written with Ryan Holiday, who's been on the show. And what I really like about the book is that they focus on the fundamentals, you know, talk a lot about the book title and the cover and things like author bio and the description. These things are all absolutely critical. So the book is not some, hey, go do some stunts and get some media. There's definitely stuff in there about the media, which is very useful because it's stuff that I don't cover in my own book, How to Market a Book. But I really enjoyed talking to Tucker, and I recommend the book, you know, for whatever it is, a few dollars, you get a lot, you'll get a lot out of it. And yeah, I think possibly some of Tucker's reputation means that some people don't take him seriously, but the guy sold like several million books of his own, let alone what he's done for other people. So I would urge you, even if you have prejudged him, you might as well have a listen and see what you think. And at the end of the show, we speculate on the future of storytelling, which was pretty interesting, which may be a little different to what you expect. And also, Tucker has an offer for the first 25 listeners to email him, and you'll hear that towards the end of the interview as well. So that is our interview today. And big industry news in the last couple of weeks as Amazon introduces pre-orders for KDP authors. Hot on the heels of Kindle Unlimited, you know, there's very little that, well, if you think about, you know, why people go with traditional publishing in terms of the benefits, if you think about online sales, there's really very little left now in terms of being an indie. That pre-orders on Amazon, and of course there were already pre-orders on Kobo and iBooks, but now we can do pre-orders on Amazon. It really, you know, kind of makes you go, well, what benefit does a publisher give me in terms of online sales? I struggle with that, to be honest. Now, some comments have been made online about, well, if you do pre-orders, then you miss out on the spike. But to me, the main reason to do pre-orders, and in fact, on a number of the platforms, the sales register on the day of release, so you do get that spike. But the point is that all the pre-marketing we do now, so I've been talking about my book, Business for Authors, for 6 months. Now, if I'd have had a pre-order button for 6 months, you guys could have ordered it as you heard about it and were interested. And there will be people who are not listening now who might have pre-ordered it earlier, but the fact is I didn't have it up. So what's very nice now is the pre-marketing that we do for our books means we can capture those sales at the point of decision. I mean, I often, as a reader, I love pre-orders because I hear about a book that I want to read and I just pre-order it and I know I don't have to remember it later. And that's really important. So Excitingly, just on that, as soon as it was announced, I immediately put up Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, up for pre-order. So it's on Amazon, iBooks and Kobo, and you can get the links or see the table of contents at thecreativepen.com/businessbook, or you can just search Business for Authors and Joanna Penn on the platform of your choice and you'll find it. It will be launching 24th of September. There will also be an audio edition, which I'm recording at the moment, and that will go up on the 24th. But if you pre-order the ebook, there'll be a voucher in the ebook, so you can get money off the audio, so you won't miss out on that deal. So there's no need to wait. You can pre-order on Kindle, Kobo or iBooks, and there'll be a voucher code, and then if you want the audio, you can get that sales price off, basically. I'll also be doing print for early October, so that we'll be doing. I'm also updating How to Market a Book at the same time, so yeah, lots coming. And little heads up, just in terms of this whole doing stuff for authors, I will be doing something exciting with David Goffren and Johnny and Sean from SPP Self-Publishing Podcast in October, November, and I will announce that later on, but just a little teaser that may be useful for you guys. Other news, the penultimate in the Adventures in Self-Publishing Translation book is launching this week, Profanazioni. It's my terrible Italian accent. That's Desecration in Italian, and it is actually out now on Amazon, but we're launching it this week and trying to get some press, doing blog posts, etc. And Italian, let's face it, is not a very big market, but I'm still really interested in how it goes, especially because my kind of writing, you know, should resonate, hopefully, with Italians. And if you're interested in translation in general, I've collected all the posts that have been up this year with all my translators at thecreativepen.com/self-publishing-translation. Or if you go to thecreativepen.com and click on entrepreneur page, it's on there too. And that has the German, Italian, Spanish info, as well as how I work with translators. So if that's something you're interested in, then check that out. On translations and things, the German, now I have two books in German. It's also been confirmed that I will be speaking at the Frankfurt Book Fair on Friday the 10th and Saturday the 11th of October. So if you're coming along to Frankfurt, please do email me and I'll be trying to organise an indie meetup at some point. I'll also be speaking in Stockholm, 14th and 15th of September. And you can check thecreativepen.com/speaking if you want to see where I'm speaking. I'll also be running an evening event and a full day seminar on creative entrepreneurship, making a living from your writing, in September, October. So you can always email me, joanna@thecreativepen, about any of those things or anything to do with the show. I love to hear from you. It's always brilliant to hear from listeners. So more big news is that a number of you now support the show on Patreon. So thank you so much for your support. And special thanks to Gilbert de David, Quinn Teagan, Antonia Clark, Topher Keane, Donna Grassman, Joe Trent, Alexis Grant, Caroline Mickelson, Kerry Howard and Jay Thorne from the Horror Writers Podcast. I really appreciate your support, as this goes towards paying for my time to research, record and produce the show. Now, I won't be talking about this every time because that will not be interesting. But I did have a number of emails asking me to explain what Patreon actually is, because I mentioned it before and talked about it in Direct Sales with Jim Kukroll, but I know it's a relatively new concept. So just a brief explanation. Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, it's basically a site where you can support artists per thing they do, as in a recurring payment rather than like a big one-off like you would do on Kickstarter. So for example, in this case, you commit to paying a certain amount per podcast, so $1 or $2 or $5 or whatever you want. So basically, if you get enough value out of the show to buy me a coffee a month, you could pledge $2 an episode. And that money only comes out of your account when I actually post an episode. So when there is a podcast, only then does that money come out. And you can stop it at any time if you get bored. So other artists on the platform might get paid per comic or by a short story or pieces of art or a song if they're a songwriter. And it's really great. I mean, I like supporting people on, I have supported quite a lot of people on Kickstarter because, you know, you feel like you're supporting the artist directly. And Patreon's kind of similar, but it's more of a recurring model, which is great because, you know, getting like $20 an episode is better than getting $200 all at once because you know that it will keep going over time. So, and also once you start looking at Patreon, you find all these people that you want to support. It's quite cool. So you can check out patreon.com/thecreativepen with a double N if you want to see how it works. And yes, I absolutely do have a fantastic corporate sponsor in Kobo Writing Life, and a big shout out to them. But their support pays for hosting and transcription, and you guys support my time. So I really appreciate that. And as I said, I won't be mentioning all of this every show. You know, I've mentioned before, I hate asking for anything. But I'll always read out the names of new sponsors and link to you on the supporters page, thecreativepen.com/patrons. Okay, so here's a little word from our corporate sponsor, Kobo Writing Life, and then I will get straight into the interview.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Christina Potter, content specialist for Kobo Writing Life. We here at Writing Life are very excited about sponsoring the Creative Pen podcast and the chance to share this amazing resource for writers. I get the opportunity to connect with indie authors and publishers every day and help them load their content and sell books around the world. I encourage authors to have a look at the many opportunities through Writing Life to generate buzz about their books. One great way to do this is to enable your title for pre-order, which you can do by selecting a future activation date in the Writing Life portal. Check out other great tips on the Writing Life blog at kobowritinglife.com. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Creative Pen podcast.
Tucker is a multiple New York Times bestselling author with over 3 million books sold. He's also a serial entrepreneur running a publishing company and a marketing business, as well as other ventures. His latest book is The Bookstrapper Guide to Marketing Your Book, Creating a Bestseller by Yourself, which is fantastic. So Tucker, tell us a bit about your background in the publishing world and how you came to reject the traditional way.
Well, the honest reason is because at the very, very beginning, I was rejected by publishing more than I rejected it. In this is in maybe 2000. I 2001. I just graduated from law school, and I got fired from my first job as a lawyer. I wasn't very good at being a lawyer. I did the work fine. I just wasn't very good at dealing with the sort of things you're supposed to do, like be nice to your bosses and stuff like that. And then I went to work for my father. He owns a restaurant company in South Florida, and my dad actually fired me from the family business. So I clearly wasn't good at law or business, or restaurants. So I kind of had to figure something else out to do. And it was funny, the whole time I was doing this, my buddies and I were sort of, we had just graduated law school, and we were all writing emails to each other because we're all living around the country. And my friends thought that my emails were like the funniest things that they'd ever read. So one of my buddies was like, look, man, you need to do this because you're not good at law, you're not good at restaurants, but you're very good at writing and you're very funny. And so I thought, okay, well, if you're going to be a writer, then you have to get a publishing deal, right? And you have to be a published author because especially in 2001, that's sort of the thought process. And so I sent the emails that basically became, I hope they serve beer in hell, to every single publisher in New York, like and agent. I don't care if you did cookbooks or you were like a fantasy agent. You got a query for me, right? And I got not just mostly rejected, I was 100% rejected from every agent and every publishing house. And so this was like late 2001, early 2002 by this point. And I had literally nothing else to do, because at that point, if no one wants to publish you or represent you, you're just kind of done, except that's what you were thinking. People used to think, except now this thing called the internet existed. And so I was like, all right, well, I can just put my stories up on a website. And this is 2002. So this is like GeoCities is, you know, like kind of the big thing. This is pre-MySpace, pre-Facebook, pre-Twitter. This is almost pre-Google. Like, this is how early this is. Google's still just a search engine run by nerds at Stanford. And so, like, I actually learned – I had to learn to code HTML. And I put my stories up. And the site is kind of funny. Everyone made fun of me because my site was so plain. And now the site that I designed looked kind of like Tumblr looks now, right? It was – I mean, clearly it was nowhere near as good technically. It was just crap HTML. But and I put my stories up, and they kind of blew up. Like, people – because they're funny. And so people – like, read them and forwarded them to their friends, and it was like, it became — this is back when email chain letters existed — and became this big thing. And so, long story short, publishers started coming back to me. MTV did like this thing on me, and publishers started coming back to me, wanting to publish my books. And so then I did Beer in Hell, and I did Assholes Finish First, and those did really well, like number one New York Times bestsellers, etc. And then I realized, well, I don't have to use publishers, that there's another way to do it. So what I did with my third book, With Hilarity Ensues, is I realized, I was like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I went to Simon & Schuster and said, I want a publishing deal. Because I was like, look, there's only about 7 to 10 distributors, but there's thousands of publishing companies. So who owns the trucks and the warehouses, and who has the sales reps that talk to B&M? It's only those 10 distributors. And so I went to SNS and I said, if you guys don't give me a distribution deal as a publisher, then I'll just go to Pegasus or someone else, and I'll do it. And so they did. And I went from making 15% of hardcover royalty to making 89% of net receipts, really just by kind of redefining who I was going to be and how they were going to treat me. It was really funny. In one meeting, I went from having the publisher of Gallery Books and my editor — they left the room, went and talked to like someone way above them, C-level person, like the CFO. They came back and they're like, all right, well, we have to go now. And the CFO and the VP of distribution and somebody else are going to come in. And then they asked me, they said, Tucker, can we stay in this meeting? And I was like, well, yeah, sure, why not? And they're like — I'm like, why do you guys want to stay? They're like, we've never actually been in a meeting with C-level people here or talked about distribution. And I was like, yeah, sure, you guys can be my guests. So CFO and the other people come in, and then it's a totally different negotiation. And because, you know, I've sold millions of books and I'm a big author, I was able to do that. And then now, as a result of all those experiences, I kind of built my own publishing company that does not just – it's hard to do that deal. You have to be a big selling author, but there's tons of other — as you know, Joanne, I don't have to tell you, there's a million different self-publishing type options that authors that are available now. And so I help authors kind of sort through what's good for them and what works, and then I help them effectuate it.
And what I love about your story — I mean, obviously your own books are quite irreverent and a certain type of humor, but what you've done with that is also turn around the kind of pick me attitude, and you've just gone, I don't like being told what to do, and just kind of got on with it. But what I also wanted to ask you is, I didn't realize that was 2002. So that's a long time ago now. So, like, what have you seen the attitude towards self-publishing? Has that attitude changed completely in that time?
The only place the attitude hasn't changed are the snobbiest, most powerful people in publishing. It's totally changed everywhere except those people, because those people don't want self-publishing to work because it reduces their power, right? So, right, I mean, like, as you said at the beginning, Joanna, I own a publishing company. I started one, I sold that one, and then it's funny, the company that bought my old publishing company, I worked for them for a while, I quit, And then they, publishing company didn't collapse, but they stopped wanting to do it. So I went back and bought the publishing company that bought me for less than I sold my other publishing company. It was a pretty cool deal. So now I run that publishing company that bought my publishing company, and it's all mine now. And I help tons of authors, and I don't, and then I also, I don't run a marketing company. Ryan Holiday owns Brass Check. He's the owner. He started it. I just helped him found it. I'm you know, a small part of that. But I see publishing from those two ends. And so I see customers. I see authors. I see everything. No one cares who publishes a book anymore except two people. The fancy people in publishing and then some fancy people in media. Because – again, it's reflective of their power. But I've never, ever, ever have I seen a customer, an actual reader who buys a book, say who published it. What they do say is, does this book look professional or does it look reputable, right? So that's one of the big things that we emphasize to all of our authors now. Whether you are self-published or traditionally published, your book must look and feel very professional and very high status. Or it needs to feel for whatever it is. If you're writing a humor book, it doesn't necessarily have to feel high status, but it has to feel what you're trying to project. And I think, you know, what's ironic now is that a lot of traditional publishers do a worse job with making professional books than some self-publishers.
Yeah, I agree. Well, although I want to come back on that because it's also some authors who are down on self-publishing. Some of the nastiest comments actually from authors. So why do you think that is? Is it just the dream? People still expect that dream?
Yes. Well, it's sort of, it's almost like a version of Stockholm Syndrome, to be honest. It's that there, if you're, I'm 38, right? And I'm right in the middle of sort of the digital divide. Like people 35 and younger kind of don't remember pre-digital. Like those are people who had email addresses in high school, right? And people older than me didn't get email addresses until maybe the sort of the end years of college or after college. I got my first email address my freshman year of college, and they started handing out email addresses at the University of Chicago like 2 years before I got there. So I'm like literally right in that divide. So I kind of straddle both worlds. I think people 40 and over, generally speaking, not everyone, but generally speaking, they don't like anything that they, most old people don't like anything they didn't grow up with. You know, I mean, you know, like every old person thinks it's so much easier now and kids are lazier and stupider, and it's never, ever true. Everyone's always said that and it's never true, right? Well, I think that's a lot of what's going on. But then combine that with the fact that if you grew up, if you're 48, let's say, and you grew up your whole life being told like, okay, you're an author if you get published, and you're an author if you get chosen by the New York literary elite, right? But and then let's say you've actually done it. I'm one of those people now, like not me personally because I hate those people, but the people like whatever novelist you want to pick, Jonathan Safran Foer, like those type of people, right? And so to them, their identity is about being chosen and selected by the literary elite. And so now what they see is people like you or Amanda Hawking who are selling way more books than them, who are way more famous and way more popular, and they're not getting chosen by the New York literary elite. They're, more importantly, actual people are buying their books because they actually enjoy them, right? But they hate that because that takes away from their status and their prestige and their power. That's why they have nasty comments, because it's not about, to them, writing is I'm not saying this about all writers, but to those people, writing is about their identity, and part of their identity is exclusion. You're not allowed in my club. I made this club and you're not, because you write down market vampire novels for white trash in Nebraska, right? And so like, which I think is total bullshit, but that's how those people think. And it's one of those things that's hard to understand until you actually talk to them and you actually work through it and you realize, wow, these people are such incredible elitist snobs. And in the worst way, they basically think that their club should be what makes them special is that they're in a small club and the only way they can feel good is if other people are excluded. And to me, that's awful. And to most people, I think any idea should compete on its merits in a fair marketplace, right? And that's what self-publishing has allowed, and that's why you've seen the death of the literary novel, because guess what? Most literary novels are terrible. They're just terrible and no one wants to read them, you know? And that's just the reality of it. That they just are.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, I'm not going to come back on all of that, but the one thing I think is interesting is that the permission aspect. I think what you've got and what I've got is we do not like asking permission. So that is one of the reasons I hate the whole rejection thing. It's like, you don't reject me because I'm not asking for your permission. But many authors don't have that entrepreneurial streak. So how do you recommend? I mean, because in Bookstrapper, you say in the first chapter, you're in charge of the marketing. But how do authors get more entrepreneurial with their whole attitude?
So these are different things, though. Saying that an author needs to be entrepreneurial is not the same as saying an author needs to get permission to write themselves. They're different things. There are people out there, I think, who are, and that's the reason Amanda Hawking took a traditional publishing deal, is because she didn't want to do all the things around writing, the business around it. I can actually understand that as a writer. But if you conflate the two things, you confuse two different issues. Asking for permission is the same thing as saying, I'm not allowed to be a writer until I get a book deal, which to me is ridiculous. I meet people all the time who are like, oh, yeah, I want to be an author. Tell me how to be an author. And then I kind of look at them. I'm like, you didn't ask me how to write, or you didn't ask me anything about writing. And they're like, oh, right, I just want to be an author. It's like, that's what being an author is. Like, they're looking at all the oh, you're famous and you're respected and girls like you and you make money and you blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, right, I did all that because I wrote stuff people want to read. That's where it all starts, being an author. So I think your point is a good one. You don't need permission to be an author. All you need to be an author is an audience. And you get an audience by writing things that other people care about and want to read, that they feel like will help their lives, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, both. Fiction helps people's lives, or they would not buy it and read it, right? Same with nonfiction. It's just nonfiction tends to have a more direct ROI, right? Okay, so now that's a different question. If you're an author, though, and you don't want to be entrepreneurial, I get that, because a lot of people, being entrepreneurial is about thinking about how to solve problems, which you actually use different parts of your brain than being creative in the way of thinking about story and about character and things like that, right? So I totally understand authors who are like, I just want to write. I don't want to do the business of writing. If you're in that situation, I think you need to hire people who are good at the things you're not good at, right? So if you're a really good author, let's say you're selling, whatever, you're selling $300,000 worth of ebooks a year or something, which is more than, like, you're in a good spot. At that point, you can easily hire someone to handle your marketing. You can hire someone to build your sort of author site, your authority site. You can hire someone to run your email list. You can hire someone to do your book marketing. You can hire someone to do all your covers. And you can even hire a virtual assistant to manage all those people. You know?
That's true, but most of the people listening don't have that.
Right. Well, here's the thing. You can't hire people to do that work until your writing is popular enough that lots of people are paying you for it, right? Mm. But here, look, Joanna, 10 years ago even, the path didn't exist to go from unknown writer sitting at your computer to making a couple, even 100 grand. Dude, even 100 grand a year, you can easily hire that whole team. They're not going to be the best in the world, but you can hire capable people at all of those levels, right? Mm. So... if you're starting at the beginning, my advice would be to not worry about marketing, to not worry about any of the business stuff. My advice would be to write. Figure out what you like writing, you're good at writing, and people want. Where is the overlap between those three sort of circles, right? I like writing this, I'm good at writing this, and people will pay to read this, right? If you can figure out that overlap, then that's where you need to focus. And then once you get good enough that you're making a little bit of money, then I would really start thinking about, okay, how big can I get? And then start learning, I'll learn the basics, and then once figure out, okay, I need to make whatever, let's say 60 grand a year to be a full-time writer. And then I'm going to need to make, I think, 20 to 40 a year easily is more than enough to hire essentially a full-time team. It doesn't mean that they only work for you. You're hiring people who, you know, maybe have 50 clients and you're one of them. But 20 is probably more than enough a year. And I'll tell you what, if you have a great job and you write on the side, you can even allocate your first 20 grand to say, all right, I'm going to hire a really good team to build my site. I'm going to hire a great team to do this, to do all these sorts of things. And then you can just focus on writing if that's what you want. Or if you want, you can go the other way around, like you have and I have, and you can learn the business behind it too, and you can focus on that. And then you don't have to hire a lot of people, or you can know, all right, I only need to hire one person for this specific thing, and then I know what all the prices are, you know, et cetera. Or, you know, the more you know, the less you have to spend on other services.
Other people. Yeah.
But it's a trade-off, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So for people with just, I think, about $6, they can get your Bookstrapper book, which I love the tagline, by the way. I like Bookstrapper. I feel like that's a great line. I want to be a Bookstrapper. So why did you and Ryan and Niels write this book?
Because we have a pretty good book marketing firm. Like I don't know if we're the very best, but I don't know anyone better. We've done the marketing for, you know, my books, which have sold over 3 million copies, Tim Ferriss's books, which have sold over 3 million copies, Robert Greene, who sold millions of copies. Who else have we worked with? Paulo Coelho, Seth Godin. We've done specific things for them. We haven't done we're not responsible for all their success. But you get on the list, like there's just dozens and dozens. I think we've launched 17 bestsellers, like 4 number one bestsellers, whatever. Like, and this is only in about a year and a half, 2 years we've been doing this. So we're really busy and we're really expensive. A book launch with us basically starts at about 20 grand and is usually can run up to 50 depending on how much work you want us to do and whatever. So, and very few people can afford that, and we totally understand that. But what we see on the other side is we see a lot of people out there selling these online courses about book marketing, and they're fucking frauds. Like, excuse my language, but it really pisses me off when these people who have literally never marketed a bestseller or any book at all are essentially like just picking, oh yeah, someone said this over here. They just read a bunch of stuff on the internet. They don't know what's right or wrong. All they know how to do is sell stuff on the internet. And so they put this information video course together, and then they have this email list, whatever, and then this email sequence they set up, and they essentially trick people using very sophisticated marketing, sort of scammy marketing techniques. People to pay anywhere from $400 to $4,000 for these little big courses that teach them, at best, they teach them nothing they couldn't get for free. At worst, they teach them stuff that's wrong or even like negative that hurts them. And so we would see these people doing this stuff. And I wasn't even mad that they were making money. I made plenty of money. It's more that what they were making money scamming people. And so all these people would come to us and be like, well, like, you know, I already paid $500 for this video course and it didn't help me and blah, blah, blah. And then they come to us and it's like we had all these different people. And I realized I basically begged Ryan, because Ryan is so busy marketing books and doing things. He's like, I don't have time to write this book. So I begged him. I'm like, look, man, we have got to do something to give to people that have very little money but have a lot of time and are willing to put in the work and learn this, because we're authors too. Ryan has bestsellers. I have books. We know what it feels like to spend a year, 2 years working on a book and then put it out and it falls flat, or to, you know, something like that, and it's terrible. And we don't want authors to be in that situation. So we decided to write the definitive book on how to think about book marketing and then exactly what to do to launch a book. And so that's sort of what the book is. Yeah,
no, and it's great. It's really detailed and there's lots of stuff in there. Just one thing. Do you think it's main? I mean, there's a lot that's crossover, but it is mainly targeted at non-fiction authors. I'd probably say at least 80% is relevant for fiction as well. But do you guys talk about fiction marketing?
No. So we actually debated calling it book marketing for nonfiction. The only reason we didn't is because I gave it to a couple buddies of mine. I think you know Sean Platt, don't you?
Yeah,
right. So I gave it to a couple buddies like Sean. He's like, no. There's a, because we're not fiction book marketing experts. But Sean said, no. There's a lot of good stuff in here for fiction guys. Just make sure you delineate. And so we did. I actually think it's less than 80%. I would say there's 40 to 60% of this book you can use for fiction, but I don't write fiction. So if you say 80, I'm going to go with what you say.
Yeah.
But it's definitely geared to nonfiction. We've never had a fiction client, I don't think, or if we have, I can't remember. We don't do much fiction, because fiction book marketing to me just, it seems, I think the best book marketing you can do for fiction is write more books.
Yeah, it's very true. And get your metadata right.
Right. But whereas for nonfiction, writing more books doesn't necessarily help you.
No.
How you market your book is far more important.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's so much in the book. I could ask you about everything. But one thing I do want to ask you about is, why is it so important to decide on your measurement for success, i.e. hitting a list versus income versus something else?
Because that fundamentally determines what you're going to do, your strategy. If your goal is, I want to hit the New York Times bestseller list, then you have to pack as many sales as possible into 1 week, your release week, right? And that's really hard to do, and it prevents other marketing strategies. You can't do everything. You know, it's sort of I can't be in two places at once. You know, I can't do this podcast and write a book. I had to pick, right? Same thing. Like, you can't hit every goal with marketing. And most of the people who come to us in the beginning, like, all right, I want to hit the bestseller list, and I want a bunch of evergreen marketing, and I don't want to spend any money, and I want to be an astronaut, and an actor, and everything. And it's like, no, you can at best have a secondary goal, but you need to pick your goal. And so, and then once we kind of break people down, a lot of people, most people in nonfiction, when you actually describe what the goals are, the various goals are, they realize hitting a bestseller list is one of those things that would be nice, but is not crucial. Most people nowadays for nonfiction want their book to serve some other purpose. So they want it to establish authority in a certain field, or to establish their career as a speaker, or to promote their business, or to promote themselves in some other way, or whatever. And so those sorts of things, if those are your goals, then a lot of times the things you have to do to hit the bestseller list actually trade off with those other goals. Mm-hmm. And so, right, we have a big section about how to understand what are your goals, you know, what are all the possible goals. We list like about 9, I think, or different possible goals, or the big ones that we see over and over, and then how those goals trade off, and help you understand which goal makes the most sense for you. You know, if you're like a rich CEO and making the bestseller list matters, then it's like, okay, fine, you've got a lot of money to spend, we can help you, you know, because you can, spending money absolutely can help hit the bestseller list. But what's funny is, beyond a certain point, beyond about 15 or 20 grand, it's like another 20 grand isn't going to make much difference. It's like either you hire people who know what they're doing and you have good content and you do the right things, or you don't, right? But most people, once we talk them through it, they realize, my book needs to serve another purpose, so I'm going to focus on those things, and then that's how I'm going to get my return.
Mm. No, that's fantastic. And then you're really well known for doing some quite outrageous stunts, and Ryan as well. But many authors are kind of introverted and hate attracting attention. So what are your sort of tips to authors for making more of an impact, even if they're introverted?
Well, here's the thing. So I don't recommend stunt-based marketing for many people, right? It works for me because I have that sort of personality and I wrote those sorts of books that made sense. And same with Ryan. I think you're totally right. Stunt-based marketing doesn't work for most books, and I don't think it works for most authors. That being said, even if you are an introvert, you can do quite a few things. Well, first off, let me just point out, one of the best-selling books over the last 2 years is called Quiet. The book by Susan Cain about how introverts can operate in the world and why they're important. And I would actually buy that book. The book's pretty fantastic. But beyond that, here's the thing actually you need to think about first, is you need to think about how much, like, what matters the most to me. If you're a writer, what matters the most and what's getting me the most results, right? So if you're a writer and let's say you already have a website and you have a decent email list, like maybe 5 or 10,000 people on your list, and you've got a good core audience, right? And let's say that between you do a guest post on a couple blogs and then you do a couple freelance things, and between that and your books, you're making a good living, 60 grand a year or something, then I would actually recommend, it depends what your goals are. If you just love writing and you don't like marketing, then I would do as much as possible to set up automatic marketing, right? So where, like, your site sort of markets itself, and then you set up, okay, like I'm gonna pull stuff out of my previous books and send those out as blog posts to my lists, and I'm gonna put those out on these sort of blogs that redirect back to my site that get people on my list, and then I'm just gonna, that's gonna be 20% of my time, and then 80% is gonna be writing, because I love writing new books, because every new book earns me, you know, let's say an amortized value of 20 grand over per year over 5 years. Then I'm just going to spend my time writing books and then kind of create auto marketing, right? That actually works for a lot of introverts. It takes a little bit of time to really understand how to set up that process and then automate it. And at the beginning, you might have to spend a little money to hire people to help you do that. But once you get an automated marketing or quasi-automated marketing process set up, you can spend 80%+ of your time doing the things that you love. Or you can look at things that, you know, other types of marketing that you do like. Let's say you're introverted, like you don't like talking to people, like, so I'm not going to do podcasts, right? But I really like email or typing or looking at a screen. So let's say you just do all your interviews as email text interviews, right? Or you can do Reddit sort of, you know, Ask Me Anything, AMAs. Or AMAs on, I think Goodreads is doing sort of like Q&A type things now. You can do like any number of those things and schedule those, you know, sort of, okay, like every Friday I'm going to try and do one. And then, you know, you do one on AMA, you pull all the best stuff out, you make it a blog post, you put it on HuffPost, you send it out to your list. Every single, what you can do too, if you're an introvert, you don't like doing press, you can say, all right, I'm going to do 5 press pieces, and then you can repackage those 5 pieces in 3 different ways a piece, so 5 pieces become 15 pieces or something like that. Mm-hmm. So think about, like, what do you like doing, what are you good at, and then how can you take those pieces and then repurpose them in other places so that you can, 1 hour sitting doing press can launch into 3 to 5 to 10 hours of equivalent sort of work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, and that's fantastic. And there's so much in the book, and I really want people to get it. It's fantastic. But just one last question. What do you see happening in the next couple of years in publishing? We've seen so much change over the last couple of years. What do you see as the next thing? You know, is it audiobooks? Is it global sales? Is it China? You know, what is it?
You're talking about small things, you're talking about big global sort of like
I'm
shifts.
More interested in big shifts personally, and my pick is global. It really is.
All right, so you want me, if you want, this might sound kooky, I'll tell you my kooky crazy,
yeah,
this is
yeah.
where I think
yeah,
gonna, we're going to be in 5 years.
Yeah.
All right, so I think it's weird. Books, in a lot of ways, books are sort of, reading is going up. And ebook sales are going up, but physical book sales and book prestige, if you think of prestige as the way it used to be in the 20th century, are going down, right? So if you look at those things and you think about, all right, I've been looking at that for a few years, and I kind of thought to myself, well, why do people even care about books? And I think for a long time, people cared about books because books were this weird cultural artifact that had this prestige and status attached to them, which is why, like we talked about earlier, like certain authors get especially traditionally published authors, look, they're the ones who look down their noses the most at self-published authors, because that's about their identity. But those people are old and they're dying. So who's replacing them? It's people who grew up in a world that physical books either didn't exist or weren't that high status or they don't care about. But those people do want information. People always want information. People always want entertainment. Mm-hmm. So fiction and nonfiction are always going to have a huge, huge place in our society. And then I thought about, like, I remember, like, a lot of my fans are guys that, like, that say things like, I hate reading, but I love your books. Or I had never bought a book before I bought your books. And then I thought for years, I've been thinking, what if they're right? What if reading does suck? Like, what if, because if you actually understand neurology, neurobiology really well, you understand that reading is a very cognitively difficult task. Mm. And, well, first off, most writing does suck, and it's not clear, and it's not, it's very much about the writer and not about the reader. And so you kind of put all these weird threads together, and I actually think the future of books is not books. The future, because books, aside from the social status that really only matters to old people, books serve a function to people. People buy books for a reason. You buy fiction because you want to be told a story that tells you about yourself, or you learn something through, or you escape through. Or you read nonfiction to learn something because you believe it will help you get something in your life, right? And I actually think the future of books is not books, but writing combined with both audio and video, what I call information ecosystems. And I think the future is going to be people who can either convey information in all mediums in a way that people can understand it really quickly and easily, or that's nonfiction, or for fiction, it's going to be people who can tell great stories that don't have to be limited to text, right? Mm-hmm. So what that means, and this is a little different than a lot of like futurists talk about. So some of the people doing this right now, in nonfiction, one of the best ones doing it is this guy named Ramit Sethi.
Yeah.
Right. So Ramit does a fantastic job of combining audio, visual, and video together with text. And people go in. If you go to his site, he's like, what do you want? Do you want to make more money? Do you want to start a business? Do you want to get a better job? Do you want to negotiate something? He doesn't try and sell you a book. He figures out what you want, and then he pushes you into a funnel where you can like learn how to get the things you want out of life. And I think a lot of people think of books used to serve that purpose before the explosion of digital technology. But I think now books are only going to be a part of this, of that ecosystem. And I think people who are authors only won't exist or will be at the fringes in maybe as quickly as 5 years, but at least 10 years. And the people who are going to dominate the future are, in nonfiction, the people who can sort of curate and learn and synthesize a ton of knowledge and make it easier for other people to learn in all mediums. And in fiction, it's going to be the people who can conceive of amazing universes in their head, whether they are broad and expansive and fantastical like George R. R. Martin, or whether they're really deep and personal and emotional like whatever Jeanette Walls or something, right? And those people I think are going to dominate the future, and they're going to do it through platforms that because like George R. R. Martin's never going to run a huge author site, he's never going to run TV shows, whatever, right? But someone like that who has that sort of storytelling and character genius, I think companies are going to arise that can essentially create all of the audio, visual, writing stuff out of his mind, right? And so I think the company that can essentially do all the work for the great informer and educator or the great storyteller, those companies are being built now. We don't know who they are or what they're looking for. I'm trying to build one of those companies, to be honest. That's why I think this is the future. But someone's going to build those companies. And then those companies will connect with the best educators or the best informers or the best storytellers, and they will create the media, fiction and nonfiction, of the future. And so I think author as a standalone job will not exist. Simply, it won't be a quick process, simply because the kids, 20-year-olds now, and I deal with some pretty exceptional some teenagers and some 20, 25-year-olds, and no one wants to be just an author. They all want books, but the book to them is a piece of this information ecosystem. Oh, I have a website, and I have a cool YouTube channel, and I have books, and I have all this other stuff, because they live all in digital media. They don't interact with digital media. They live in it. And I think books are essentially not going to be seen as different. They're going to be seen as a part of it. And then eventually, they'll almost not exist on their own. Writing, I think, absolutely will. Books as their own separate artifact, and authors as a separate job independent from other things, I think eventually will phase out and will no longer exist.
And it's good you said that, because on my to-do list is to figure out how we can get into Oculus Rift. I'm like, that is, you know, that is
people
coming.
People don't understand. It's so funny. People don't realize, like, okay, people are like, oh, you know, there are no more great poets. And I look at them and I'm like, what are you talking about? Some of the greatest poets who have ever lived are alive today.
They're rappers.
And creating art. They're called rappers. Exactly. Yeah. And people are like, oh, all the great novelists are gone. And I'm like, some of the best storytelling that's ever existed is coming out right now. And they're called video games designers, right?
Gaming.
Or story, I forget what their name is, but the story editors for video games, right? Like some of the greatest, most amazing creatives just have different names and they're operating in different mediums. So if you think about poetry going from, you know, like T.S. Eliot to Eminem, then think that transition is going to happen in books, because we're going to go from George R.R. Martin to whatever, whoever, we don't know who the next, what the next person's going to do, but it's going to be someone who can create incredible universes in their head and then translate them into medium that is comprehensive and inclusive of sort of all human senses. And your Oculus Rift is a perfect example. If you're a great storyteller and a great fiction writer, I would actually, especially if you're young, you're not getting a lot of traction in books, why don't you go start writing? Go team up with some programmers, because I've never met an engineer who can tell a fucking story. So you team up with an engineer who's designing things for Oculus Rift, because they're going to need story. And story is hard. And story is difficult. And it's a very distinct skill. You can become – people will, it's funny. People won't call you a storyteller or a novelist, even though you're going to have to write novels inside of Oculus Rift, just like video games.
No.
You know?
We live in exciting times. We do indeed. And, yeah, so where can people find you and your books and your services online?
The best place is probably – so my publishing company is called Lioncrest. Just go to lioncrest.com, or Bookstrapper is – the book is called The Bookstrapper Guide to Marketing Your Book. That's on Amazon, or I'll tell you, Joanna, I'll do your readers or your listeners a favor. The first, whatever, let's say 25 people of your listeners who email me, just email me Tucker@bookstrapper.com and say, hey, give me a PDF of the book. I'll send the first 25 I get a free copy of the book marketing book. Yeah. Because like, look, we make plenty of money doing publishing and marketing these books. I'm more than happy to like give out the information, you know, basically for as long as the person is going to actually read it and use it. Mm-hmm. Like all I ask is, I'm sure most people who listen are actual
my
authors.
My audience will.
Right. Exactly. So if you're a real author and you really want to know how to market your books better, especially nonfiction, but fiction are welcome to use it, then do a copy 25 and then just all I ask, come back and tell me what works, what doesn't work. Cause we'll keep updating this book and keep because that's how we get better at our jobs, right? We make a lot of money doing what we do, but the reason we're really good is because we stay up on the newest – shit changes fast, right? So the best way to stay up on the newest things going on is to give your information away for free and then get feedback from other people about what's working and what's not working. And then I make all my money on the extreme margins with the high-value authors who don't want to worry about marketing. They'll just pay me. Or they don't want to worry about publishing. They just pay me. Or they don't want to worry about creating their author platform. They just pay me, right? I'm not trying to sell, like, you know, $1,000 things. I'd rather sell one $30,000 thing.
Yeah, very smart. You know? Well, thanks so much for your time, Tucker. That was brilliant.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.